Everyone is a moon and has a dark side which he never shows to anybody. Mark Twain. How could you not know? That was a question everyone asked. Friends, family, reporters, the cops. I think even Ricky may have said it the night he tried to kill me. It was the question I continued to ask myself 3 years later. How the hell could you not have known? Because I didn't want to know? Because by the time I began to wonder, it was already too late? A sudden gust of wind hit the unmarked police sedan, shaking me out of my thoughts. I took note of the distant, snow-dusted mountains, sharp-edged blue silica and granite outlined against darker blue skies. Not much farther now. I glanced in the side mirror, caught a slice of my own reflection. Dark hair, dark sunglasses, dark and unshaven jaw. The road behind us was empty, except for the small speck of an RV we'd passed minutes earlier.
"That's a turnoff up ahead," Lieutenant Stagg asked, double-checking the directions recited by the mechanical voice of the GPS.
"Yeah." A flash flood had taken out the faded, bullet-riddled sign over a year ago. The road department never got around to replacing it. Nobody lived out this way. Not even the deer that Deer Lane had been named for.
"Beautiful country," Lieutenant Stagg said, and I laughed.
He looked away from the road, a trace of surprise on his face as he met my disbelieving gaze.
"I grew up in Lompoc. I like the high desert," he said.
"Sure." I stared ahead at the worn and fading highway, grayed and pitted asphalt, edges crumbling away to sand and sagebrush. The morning sunshine cast luminous golden light over the stark and unforgiving landscape. Out of the corner of my eye, I watched Lieutenant Stagg. Not that I suspected him of anything. It was just hard to tune him out. He was about my age, late 30s, medium height, compact build, light eyes that could have been blue or maybe green. Gray? Square shoulders, square jaw, the kind of haircut that only looked good on a Marine, which he'd probably been before he'd joined LAPD. He had that kind of blunt, serviceable attractiveness you see in a lot of those died-in-the-line-of-duty photos. I did not want Lieutenant Stagg dying in the line of duty protecting me. Enough people had already died thanks to me. That's what happens when you fall in love with a psychopath. The first time I ever saw Ricky Barber, he was testifying in court against another inmate who had assaulted and nearly killed a prison guard. Ricky was in his early 20s then. Blonde and bearded, with soft brown eyes. In addition to being handsome, he was polite and well-spoken, a very different animal from the predators he was speaking out against. I was impressed by his courage. Pretty white boys don't do well in the prison system, and his guts and integrity made me curious about his case. What I learned was not encouraging. Ricky was starting a life sentence for second-degree murder. The woman he'd been living with had come at him with a broken beer bottle, and in the struggle, he'd accidentally killed her. His lawyer failed to get the charges reduced to self-defense or even manslaughter because the girlfriend had placed a couple of domestic violence calls previous to the fatal incident. Worse, Ricky was strongly suspected in the death of his girlfriend's ex-husband. There hadn't been enough evidence to charge him in the husband's death, and there was a good chance that if he was guilty, he hadn't acted alone. If he'd had an accomplice, assuming he'd been involved at all, she was dead now. In the case of Mariah Evans, the evidence against Ricky was mostly circumstantial, but there was a lot of it, enough to convince a jury. You get cynical covering the crime beat, but I kept thinking of how Ricky had acted to save that guard, and then how he'd spoken up in court against vicious offenders he still had to live with. He had to know he was risking his own safety, but he had done the right thing. I couldn't forget the quiet dignity he'd displayed, despite the way the defense had tried to discredit him. I went to see him at the Central Men's Jail in Orange County.
"You want to stop?" Lieutenant Stagg asked, breaking the silence. "You need to stretch your legs?"
"No. No. I just wanted to get to where we were going. I did not want to admire scenery or make conversation. I did not want the lieutenant feeling like he had to be courteous, to pretend this was anything but an unwelcome assignment. What was his story? Not that I really cared, it was just my natural curiosity. Or maybe my unnatural curiosity. My mother was a big fan of the TV show The Hardy Boys when she was growing up, particularly of Parker Stevenson, which was how I ended up with the first name Parker. Being named for a primetime sleuth might even explain my unhealthy interest in other people's business. During the trial, the second trial, some clever asshole at the Times had referred to me as Nosy Parker, and the other papers, including my own, had picked it up. Anyway, aside from a tendency towards small talk, Lieutenant Stagg seemed professional and competent, and that was all I needed from him. That was all I had needed from any man for a long time. Joshua trees, twisted and spiked silhouettes, flashed by in the bright spring sunlight. Despite the ongoing drought, gold and purple wildflowers supplied startling bursts of color in the otherwise bleached landscape. Another jackrabbit darted out across the road. The last time, Lieutenant Stagg had veered slightly, and the rabbit lived to endanger other motorists. This time, a jeep was coming from the opposite direction, and Stagg never swerved. The rabbit hit the tires with a grim thump. The jeep zoomed past, and we sped on our silent way. Initially, I think I amused Ricky. He was bored, he was lonely, and I offered good entertainment value for the money. A do-gooder journalist looking for a big story, or even a little human interest story. I was someone to talk to, and he needed someone to talk to. I don't think he expected anything more to come out of it than a few magazines and a little cash applied to his commissary account. I didn't expect anything to come out of it either, but he knew how to spin a yarn. He was convincing, and the more I listened, the more I began to wonder if maybe, by some chance, he really was telling the truth about having been set up. If I closed my eyes, I could see him as clearly as if Ricky sat next to me, and not Lieutenant Stagg. "Why did you do it? I understand why you went to the aid of the guard, but why did you testify against your fellow inmates?" Ricky shrugged, drew on his e-cigarette. The knuckles of his right hand were tattooed with the word "free." "You had to know it was going to make things tougher for you in here." He gave me a sideways look and smiled. It was a rueful, unexpectedly appealing smile. "No," he shook his head. "You've got me wrong. I'm not a hero. But I didn't get on the bus either. I'm not looking for a reduced sentence." "Then, yeah, some of these fuckers have it in for me, but they already did. The difference is, now the hacks look out for me. A little." I was taken aback by his honesty. "I'd like to come back and talk with you again, if you don't mind," I'd said at the end of that first interview. Ricky had looked startled and then pleased. "I don't mind." I came to see him the next week and the week after that. I didn't tell Ricky I was digging into his case, didn't make him any promises, not at first. But the deeper I dug, the more obvious it became that not only was the evidence against him largely circumstantial, the cops had cut more than a few corners gathering it. There was a strong possibility some of the evidence had even been manufactured. Eventually, I realized he'd been railroaded, that Ricky was innocent. Innocent. Funny to think of that now. The innocent one had been me. Except, the correct word was stupid.